I was telling Reverend Maggie, you know, this is one of the first, our ministry is about 6 years old, and this was one of the first places that we came. Reverend Maggie invited us. So thank you so much, Maggie. It's a thrill for us today because you're here. A lot of times when we're here, you're not here, which is, you know, right and all that, but it's a blessing to have you here today, and we're so, so grateful to you. So, well, let's get started, shall we? When I was a kid, I heard this song. It said, I know you didn't bring me all this way to leave me. I didn't believe in anything then. Who brought me? Who left me? I didn't know. I didn't care. My MO was so low, so low. I couldn't feel your heart, your hand, your holy waiting. When we met, I wept, finally aware of your heart, your hand, closer than my anger or my longing. You met me where I was, said it's never too late. I am always here. I know you didn't bring me all this way to leave me. Now I know you brought me all this way to love me.
There has never been a time you let me down. Oh, never. I've heard it said I can turn away, but you turn with me, magnified in me. I see that every time I stumble, you carried me when I was bound. You set me free. There has never been a time you let me down. Oh, never.
I celebrate you every day, except when I don't, when I forget. A slip back to solo, alone, so I don't know the shape of your grace. I can't find you anywhere. Then I remember, and there you are, pressed so close that every breath is a return to you. I know you didn't bring me all this way to leave me. Now I know you brought me all this way to love me.
I am lost. Please hold. That's fascinating.
There has never been a time you were let down.
Okay.
No, never.
Yes. Okay.
Do you want me to do my verse again?
I want you to do that, the chorus. I know you didn't bring me.
I know you didn't bring me all this way to
never,
leave me.
Never.
Now
never,
I know you brought me all this way to love me.
There has never been a time. When I get lost, I've heard it said I can turn away, but you turn with me, magnified in me. And I see that every time I stumble, you carried me. When I was bound, you set me free. There has never been a time you let me down. Oh, carrying me. When I was bound, you set me free. There has never been a time you let me down. There has never, ever, ever been a time.
When I was sick, you were there. When I was scared, you were there.
There's never, 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 never been a time
when I gave up, you were there. When I got up, you were there.
There has never, ever, ever been a time.
All the time, you are there.
Never, never, ever, ever been a time.
All the time, you are here.
Never been a time, 'cause there has never been a time you let me down. Oh, never.
Why do bad things happen? Now, I'm not talking about what just happened with our song. It's actually the name of our talk today. Why do bad things happen? There's a great philosopher who's weighed in on this issue, Dr. Seuss. This is what Dr. Seuss has to say. Dr. Seuss says, when bad things happen, we can let it define us. We can let it destroy us. Or we can let it strengthen us. Isn't that great? Dr. Seuss. Now, we're going to tweak Dr. Seuss a little bit. We're going to say the three things are define us, destroy us, or deliver us. It's got strengthen in there, but it's also got some extra oomph, and we're going to talk about that. Define, destroy, deliver. We're also going to tweak Dr. Seuss a little bit and say, it's not so much that you choose between those three things. When something appears in your life that appears bad, that appears challenging, right? You actually can often usually go through three phases of being defined, destroyed, and then delivered. When something bad first appears, I'm going to use the word bad in air quotes, but initially often it appears bad, it's not actually bad to be defined by it, right? Because you've broken denial. Oh, this is happening. This is going on. And I'm going to define the problem, and I'm going to define my relationship to it, right? Let's take a look. The next phase, destroyed. Well, yes, we can allow ourselves to be destroyed by things. But we here, we have spiritual tools, right? Here. And so when I use the word destroy, I mean destroy our old beliefs. Destroy our old beliefs about ourselves, about other people, right? We allow those to be destroyed in order to be delivered, in order to come out the other side. Now, right now, and I can just looking out in this room with all of us, physical distance and masks, right now there's an awful lot going on that we're still in the world, and also in our country, and maybe in each of our own lives, that we're still in the define-destroy part, right? We haven't come all the way out to deliverance yet in certain things, right? Globally, we're in the middle of a pandemic. In this country right now, we're having a lot of conflict about the issue of equity and justice, and each of us are having our own reactions to that, and then sometimes have our own things. So a lot of destroy and deliver. I mean, well, it's funny. I meant to say define and destroy, but I said deliver. And we're so we're looking for that deliverance, right? And we know spiritual tools, that's how we get here. So today, Melissa and I are each going to share a story about being defined, destroyed, and delivered by something because we're all the way out the other side, and we want to bring that to you a little bit. So Melissa is going to get us started. Melissa.
I'm glad I got delivered and found my place in the music. When I was growing up, I wanted to be a rock star. I am not speaking metaphorically. I mean, I wanted to be a rock star. And not just any rock star, actually. I ached to be Janis Joplin. Yes, I am aware that Janis Joplin was a raging drug addict who died a young and tragic death. And yes, this was a sign of things to come in my life. But that's what I wanted. And that really was like what I was all about. That was my central theme. So I followed Ms. Joplin's footsteps, both in diving into my music and diving into drug addiction at a pretty young age. And then after college, I moved to the San Francisco Bay Area to pursue my dreams to be a rock star. Many years later, quite a few years later, I met a guy who was from LA, and it was like, oh, this is it. This is it, right? So this, we're going to call him Tommy today. So Tommy worked with a really high-profile band in Los Angeles. He was, like, very connected. And he knew people, you know? And he believed that I could be a star. Actually, beyond that, he thought I should be a star, which is why I liked him so much. And he wanted to help make it happen for me. So our plan, he decided he was going to take me on as his client, relocate me to Los Angeles, groom me, you know, introduce me to all the right people, and get me signed. Yeah, right? So now at this point, I had been living in San Francisco for years. I was singing blues in a bar with my blues band, and I was continuing to practice other aspects of Janis Joplin's life, including drugs and alcohol. But I was so excited that I was going to now move to LA. I was going to live happily ever after and be Janis Joplin Jr. Right? Yay! So I gave notice to the band. I was teaching music out of my apartment, my little cute little studio apartment in Noe Valley. I gave notice to the apartment manager, the apartment, and to all my students because I'm moving to LA. Right? Yeah. So this is all, you know, March 1st, I'm moving to LA. This is all set up and ready to go. And then in December, you can imagine, I'm about to tell you the story, right? So you know, things started to happen. So in December, I started noticing some things. So first thing was that Tommy told me this story. He told me this story about a very dear old friend of mine that was a lie. And I knew it was a lie, but it was so inconsequential. It was such an odd story to even tell me. It like had nothing to do with anything. There was no reason to tell me this. So I just kind of tilted my head a little and then went, whatever, you know, let it go. I really did completely let go. But then a couple weeks later, so now we're getting up to Christmas time, right? So we had plans to get together in LA just after the holiday and start working and be together, celebrate Christmas, you know, my new family, right? So he said, just, you know, tell me your travel parameters, what you, and I'll book your travel and get you down here and everything, right? Good, good to go. But then a little while later, days later, he gets me my itinerary. And my itinerary is completely like stomping on what my requests were for the travel. And when I asked him about it, he had me leaving earlier and getting back later than what I had requested and said I needed. When I asked him about it, made sense to me. He said, you know, holiday travel difficulties, like we couldn't get you those times because of all the people traveling for the holiday, which made sense to me. That's all good. I'm good to there. But then a few days later, I was hanging out with my best friend, Brian. So Brian and I had done a gig together, and we were getting high afterwards because I was still trying to be like Janis in many ways. And I was just telling him my frustrations that coming up in a few days, you know, I'm going to have this crazy schedule because the parameters I requested were completely ignored because of the travel with all the holiday stuff. And he's listening to me and he starts kind of scratching his head and he says, you know, Melissa, I don't believe that. He said, with all the flights that go every single day, all day and night from San Francisco to Los Angeles, it doesn't make sense to me that he couldn't possibly have found a way to get you there when you wanted and get you back when you requested. I think you should call the airlines and ask them. And you know those moments in your life where someone says something to you and you can like viscerally call up and remember exactly what it felt like in that moment? That moment, it was like my heart fell through my stomach because some part of me knew that he was right. So I did. I went home and I called the airlines. And sure enough, even then, now this is weeks after he booked my flights, they still had flights that would have honored what I needed. So I started thinking, first of all, this is completely bizarre. And secondly, now what do I do? What do I do with this information, right? I was crushed. I was confused. And why would he lie to me about this? Why? Like, what would be the point of that? And I was just angsty, you know? And it was really defining me. I mean, it really was like, this is all that was going on for me. You know those times? It's like all I could think about, like, why and what do I do and why and what do I do? I talked to everyone who would hear me about it and wanted opinions, you know? What do you think? What do you think? So my family seemed to pretty much agree that by not going to L.A., if I was thinking of that, I was saying no to my dreams, and I was like, you know, destroying my lifetime dream because I was sabotaging. But most of my friends seemed to agree that they thought it was really like it would be an insane thing to do to still move to L.A. and to offer my life up to move to where I don't know anyone but this person who is supposedly now in charge of my life. And I'm going to turn my life over to this person who I shouldn't or now couldn't trust. And then one final conversation helped me become clear. So I had this friend, and I was talking to her on the phone. I was telling her, the way that I was experiencing it then was, I feel like my lifelong dream, the one thing that I've wanted more than anything, is knocking on my door. And if I don't move to LA, I'm telling it to go away. And she said, well, I have some feedback. Would you like to hear it? Now, when this particular friend used to say to me, I have some feedback, would you like to hear it? I knew my world was about to be changed. So I took a deep breath and I said, yes, yes, I would like to hear what you have to say. And she said, does your lifelong dream include having a manager that you can't trust? That was my answer. I couldn't go. It would be crazy to do that, to say yes and go with this person. So the other thing that the conversation did for me, that conversation and all the other conversations with other people, is I started to learn about something I hadn't known about, which is pathological liars. Has anyone ever known a pathological liar? Oh my God, so confusing. So the thing that's really trippy and that like helped to like make me go, pathological liars lie for no reason at all. And that's part of what was going on for me. Part of why I couldn't figure out whatever was like, well, why would he lie to me about that? There's no reason. No, there is no reason. Exactly. He's a pathological liar. So I finally figured that out. But in doing so, it like broke my life. I was on this track. It took my life off of the rails completely. So there I was now, firmly planted in phase two. It was destroying me. It was destroying my dream. It was destroying my plans. It was destroying me and my life. And I was really lost. I was depressed. I was grieving. I was, you know, nothing sounded like what I wanted to do, you know, like what do I do now? And nothing came, like, well, silence, you know. Nothing sounded fun. Nothing was interesting to me. Sounds like depression, right? So that's what was going on for me. I was really clearly, like, deep in that destroyed phase. And then I had this friend who lived in Hawaii who contacted me out of the blue, and we were catching up. And she said, I think now would be a really good time for you to come and visit me and stay a while in Hawaii. Like, oh my God, all of a sudden something sounded fun. That was the first thing in weeks, months, that sounded like it had some energy in it for me, you know? So I said yes, and I thought, well, this will be really great. I'll go to Hawaii, and I'll get some clarity about what is mine to do next, and I'll do a cleanse. So I did. I packed up, I booked my flight, I went to Hawaii, and I did a cleanse. And this cleanse included no drugs or alcohol for weeks. The thing was, it was a lot harder for me to have no drugs and alcohol for weeks than I ever would have imagined it was going to be. I didn't know how to have my feelings. I didn't know how to process my feelings. I didn't even know I had all those feelings. I was totally overwhelmed. It was really, really intense. I lived through it. But it was, you know, tough. And after returning home, I went back to using drugs and alcohol. Only now it was a little different. Because now I had this awareness of what I was running from by using. I had an awareness of the feelings. And I had this desire. I had this kind of passionate desire for me to have an ability to use drugs and alcohol to party. Party, but not need to. Now, most we call in recovery programs, we call people who can do that normies. When I at one point met somebody and called them a normie, they were like, I've never been called a normie. What is it? So that's what it is. Like people who can, you know, have a drink, party a little bit, and then they don't have to the next day. That was not me. They could stop, like have a couple drinks and then stop. No, not my reality. Not the reality of those of us with that particular kind of addiction. So here I was now, aware that I want to have the option. I want to have the freedom to use drugs and alcohol, but have it be an option, right? And it was impossible for me. I really tried. And in the process of trying, I started using earlier and earlier every day. Finally, though, 30 years, 10 months, and 14 days ago, I got clean. Yay! Yeah. Phase three, deliverance. Praise God. Becoming clean and sober completely up-leveled my life and made everything better, like immediately. And then a couple years later, I met people in Science of Mind, including Maggie, because I found Centers for Spiritual Living, which then really lifted my life to another yet higher level of potentiality, but also just good right out, straight out the gate. So with now, with hindsight, of course, I say, thank you, Tommy. Thank you for the lies. Thank you for the heartbreak. Thank you for tearing apart my life. It's one of the best things that ever happened to me. And thank you Janis Joplin for planting the seeds for the journey that I would take in my life. For the whole road I walked was started there. And thank you, God, for my sobriety. Thank you, Spirit, for my one day at a time recovery and for allowing me to find my way to my perfect expression of that desire to be a rock star that is really aligned with my soul and my essence, which is this. Which, if you had told me, you know, I've gone from singing the blues in bars to singing about spirit and the freedom of a life of spirituality in centers for spiritual living and events, spiritual things, hanging out with us touchy woo-woo folks, I would have told you, you know, no, that is not going to be happening. And I wouldn't even have thought it was a good thing. And I get to do it all with my beloved, the most amazing human being on the planet, in my opinion. You might have your favorites, but, you know. From that craving life of ego cravings, right, which is what my life was before, to a life of really serving, really like that's what I want to do is serve and uplift and bless from the fullness of my being. So if you had told me that that was going to be what happened when I hung up the phone from calling the airlines that December day, I would never have believed you. Because sometimes disasters are not what they seem. Bad things don't actually happen. What we think of as bad things, no matter what it looks like, it is Spirit's invitation, Spirit's call to a new level for us, a new expression. We have to go through that destruction phase. You can't just move in there. Like I was considering doing, maybe. The Spirit has not brought us all this way to leave us. There has never been a time where that's been what's happening. The Spirit has got us. What we call bad things is Spirit's call to the next level of good, and we have to be willing to allow aspects of our life and our being to be destroyed, so that we can be delivered. Z?
Yes.
Your turn.
Okay. So define, destroy, deliver. My turn. When I graduated from college, I had no idea what I wanted to do with my life. I was an English major in college. Perhaps you've heard the joke about English majors. Philosophy majors asks, what is the purpose of all existence? Chemistry majors ask, what is the chemical molecular formula under all existence? English majors ask, would you like fries with that? Right, so that's what I felt like. I felt like I was basically prepared to speak English and maybe serve some fries, although it turned out I wasn't very good at that either. Yeah. I found myself on a farm. This was on Cape Cod, Massachusetts. I found myself on a farm where some of my friends were working, and I knew nothing about it, but there I was. It was really cool. A man named Hollis Lovell, he was in his 80s at the time, was the owner, and he hired a young kid named Stuart to run the farm. A few months after Stuart started, he left, so they needed someone new to run the farm, and Hollis and I had gone to the same college, so he decided I should do it. Like, oh yeah, you can do this. Yeah, sure. I knew nothing about farms. But I said, sounds cool. Sure, I'll do it. It was a 4 to 5 acre farm, kind of like a big overgrown garden on Cape Cod, like I said. And it was half pumpkins and half vegetables of all kind. So I hired my best friend. I'm the kind of person who always has a lot of friends, but one best friend. I hired my best friend to help me because it was a pretty small operation. And in the summer, I had to hire a bunch of people to help harvest. But most of the year, it was just the two of us. So my best friend, Jane, came to work with me. And at this point, I had discovered spirituality. I discovered spiritual truth and metaphysics. And so had my best buddy. So a lot of what we were doing, we could talk because we were planting or weeding or harvesting or turning over the crops. We were side by side talking all day about spiritual stuff and getting paid. It was amazing. It was incredible. These happy times went on for about 6 years or so. And then I developed chronic lower back pain. Like bad, like really bad. I couldn't do anything. I had to stop working. All I could do was lie in bed all day. So talk about being defined by something. It was all I could think about all the time. And then I had to go on disability. So talk about something defining me. Because I was not able to work. I couldn't support myself. So here I am, I'm on disability, and this is also where the potential destroy comes in, because at this point in my life, I had two choices. I could go on the pain meds they gave me, in which case I was all knocked out and zonked out, or I could be conscious, but then in intense pain. And this was probably the lowest point in my life, because at that point, I was suicidal. I just thought, I can't, if this is gonna be my life now, I don't want to keep going like this. Like this, I don't want to keep going. I did tried a bunch of things for the back pain, chiropractic and acupuncture and massage, and finally all that together helped a little lessen the pain so that I was able to go back to work. And Jane was there. She'd been there in my absence, and I never forget the first day I come back to work, and she said, "So I have something to tell you." I said, "What?" She said, "Well, I'm running the farm now." I said, wait, I don't get it. And she said, "Well, Hollis, the man who owned the farm, he says your pumpkins are too small, and so she wants me to run the farm." Now, she wasn't speaking metaphorically. She meant the pumpkins were actually too small because I had been using organic fertilizer, not chemical fertilizer, so he wanted someone who would come in and do the, you know, the chemical fertilizer and stuff. So I said, "Well, when did this happen?" And she said, "Oh, it was a few months ago." I said, "And you didn't tell me?" She said, "No." So now we have a new level of destruction going on, because now I can still work there, but I've been demoted. So I've lost my job. And I've also lost my best friend, because she doesn't want to talk about this. Like, there's this awkwardness now between us, but she doesn't want to talk it out. So what went from the two of us all day, chatty, chatty, it's the two of us all day, nothing to say to each other. So I'm still in constant pain. So my health has been destroyed. The job is not what it was, and it's really hard and awkward, and I've lost my best friend. All I had then was my spiritual practice. That was it. And I clung to my spiritual practice. I had prayer, I had affirmations, spiritual study, I had found a spiritual community, and that was it, because everything else was gone. And you know how in those times, it suddenly makes the spiritual stuff like bigger and brighter, because that's it? And it was through that community that someone one day handed me a book and said, "Hey, you might want to check this out." And it was called Healing Back Pain by Dr. John Sarno. Healing Back Pain by Dr. John Sarno, an MD out of Columbia in New York, but he had this mind-body technique. And I got a little ding, 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 ding. I read this book. After 1 year of being in constant pain for 1 year, within a few weeks, the pain was totally gone. So here I am, delivered out to the other side, right, with this one thing, but I still have a job that's dead end and a friend who doesn't want to talk to me. Former best friend. So I thought, well, what do I want to do? Same kind of thing, right? Everything's gone. What next? Well, I love spirituality and psychology. And so I did some research, which I don't quite know how I did, because there was no internet then. I'm like, how did we ever research things back then? Somehow, though, I found out, here I am in Massachusetts, I found out that the one place in the country to study spirituality and psychology at the time was California, because that's the kind of thing we do out here, right? So I flew by myself across the country to California. I interview at this school. I get in. I have so much extra time. I find a place to live. A few weeks later, I'm driving by myself in my little Honda Civic across the country. I know no one in California. I had this little Honda Civic. I didn't even have a radio, so I had a little boombox sitting next to me in the passenger seat with these tapes. Remember tapes? I had tapes of gospel songs because that was it. That was all I had that was getting me through this with Spirit. That was it. And so I played those tapes all the way cross country. Like, Spirit, you got to do this because I don't know what I'm doing. And when I look at my life now, everything in my life now started to get better because of that time at the farm. Exactly when things seemed to be the worst and were all being destroyed, everything started to get better then. My health. So this day, right now, I'm healthier than I've ever been. The work of John Sarno has actually ended up, and his mind-body technique that we actually do workshops about now, has ended up healing all kinds of things and keeps me healthy in a way that I never would have found had I not had that back pain and that disaster. My career, my job, I hit a dead end with that job. It was time to move on, but I couldn't see it. I wasn't willing to go. It brought me over here. I did deep work in spiritual psychology, which eventually led me to ministry, which is the best thing. It's what I was born to do. It's the best thing for me. And my best friend now is Melissa, my best friend ever. So when we look around at those bad things in our country, on the planet, or in our lives, that's when it's time to cling to our spiritual practice, to cling to our spiritual sight. Because where we see chaos, Spirit sees opportunity. Where we see destruction, Spirit sees new beginnings. And where we see that Spirit has left us, Spirit is right here with us, loving us every step of the way. I know you didn't bring me all this way to leave me. Now I know you brought me all this way to love me. Now I know you brought us all this way to love us. All of us. And so it is. Thank you. We want to do a song now for Maggie because she heard us do this song at an installation for a fellow colleague and said, I want you to do that next time you come. And next time we came, which was last time we were here, we did the song. But she wasn't here, so we have to do it again. Now, this has a spoken word part. You're not allowed to sing with me, but there's a loophole here because we didn't say anything you couldn't speak with me, right? And it's very quiet. So the chorus goes like this. And it's got movements, too, if you want to say them. So, love is the only truth, and the only truth is love. Say it with me, or not. Love is the only truth, and the only truth is love. And where it comes in the song is a little tricky, so you want to hear when I say, hush, little baby, 'cause there's just this love. And Marianne is graciously joining us, as you noticed, this morning on drums. We're very happy to have that. It was a special surprise we didn't know we were going to get. All right, we ready?
Yes.
Okay.
Almost.
Almost. Almost ready.
I said yes, and then, okay.
Here's something that isn't true. There aren't 24 hours in a day. I mean, there are, but only because we say so. Because thousands of years ago in ancient Egypt, someone stuck a stick in the ground and watched the shadows to try and measure the arc of a day. And don't get me started on this trip called time, the trippity-slippity thing that doesn't exist in the first place. I ain't no Einstein, but I tell you what, there's only one thing that's ever stuck. It doesn't need a stick in the ground for me to trust it. Hush, little baby, 'cause there's just this love.
Love
is the only truth.
Love.
And the only truth
love.
Is love. Again, love.
Love
is
love.
The only truth. And the only truth is love.
When I let go of all that I believe, what isn't left is true. Release the stories of things I see. All I see is you. In the spaces between starlight, in the shelter of the dark, in the memories of sweet goodbyes, the beating of my heart. It's you.
Something else that isn't true, what we call love, right? There's a guy at work, you don't even know his name, but you're sure he's the one who can satisfy that need that hurts and howls and wants what's real till you find out he's married or gay or not gay and can't give you anything but need and more need. See, love doesn't ask. Love only answers, and the answer is always yes. I don't know much, but I tell you what, there's only one thing that's ever stuck that doesn't need anything for me to trust it. Hush, little baby, 'cause there's just this love.
Love
is the only truth.
Love.
And the only truth is love. Love.
Love
is the only truth. And the only truth is love.
When I let go of all that I believe, what isn't left is true. Release the stories of things I see, all I see is you. In the spaces between starlight, in the shelter of the dark, in the memories of sweet goodbyes, the breaking of my heart, it's you.
And the only truth is love.
All that is
love is the only truth. And the only truth is love.
Is
love
you.
Is the only truth. And the only truth is love.
All that is
love is the only truth. And the only truth is love.